movie on and learn from them. So I used to do classical dance.
It's never too late.
I don't know. Now I can't even move. I just, my body is like so lazy, and I don't know. It's very difficult.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra. And welcome to Hamro Yatra. Our 10th guest today is a multi-award-winning designer and business owner, Sanyukta Shastha. Being chosen to design for Miss Nepal 1997 when she was just 17 years old, Sanyukta has been using art to express herself from an early age. Her path to finding her purpose took her to attend master's degree in London College of Fashion and eventually the opening of her bridal boutique, Behuli, on her own terms, being kind to people and the earth. The first Nepali fashion and sustainable bridal designer to have one of her sustainable couture creations preserved in the prestigious fashion museum in Bath, UK, you can certainly say Sanyukta's bridal designs are well sought after. In this episode, we go over Sanyukta's journey of juggling being a teenager and a budding designer to making her mark in the Nepali fashion industry, then leaving all of the fame and recognition to start from scratch in London. She might be shy in nature, but has the strongest willpower and the most positive mindset. A big believer of listening to one's instincts, Sanyukta has found her idea of success in her family and purpose in fashion.
Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Sanyukta Di. I'm so excited to hear about your journey. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and namaste to everyone. And especially thank you to you to inviting me. And I think it's going to be really fun, really amazing time with you. I'm quite excited to share some of my journey.
Same. So I like to start with just a few random questions. The first being, if you could have any superpower, what would that be?
Oh my God, you should have sent me this question beforehand so I could prepare myself. I would not want to have a superpower.
Okay.
Because I think otherwise I'll be very spoiled. As I think there's a human nature, isn't it? If you have too many powers, you just probably couldn't handle. I don't know. I think I'm happy with how I am, with lots of flaws, and
you just want to keep it real as well.
Yes, I think I'm very a realistic person, I would say. So I don't want to be superhero. I think if I have a power, I would want to live my life as normal as possible.
If you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Ooh. Only one. I think I'll be bored because I love to try different food. But if somebody gives me more of what would you choose more out of all the food, then only I can tell you what that would be.
What would that be?
Momos. I'm a super fan of momo, honestly.
Same.
If I have momos, and you know, my husband always get surprised. He's used to off now, because in the fridge, if momo is some, you know, ki baki savani, the leftovers, then nobody's allowed to touch that. You know, it's just mine. Until it finishes, there shouldn't be any momos left in the fridge. So
momo is one thing that even my husband knows that I won't share with him.
Oh, okay.
And if there's like, if we're eating, momo is something that I'll always finish quickly before he does as well. And if he has more, then he'll always give them to me because he's like, okay, like I like momo, but I know you love them more than I do.
Yeah, same, honestly. He's like always like momos. That's mamas, you know. Even my daughter has to sometimes sacrifice mom's. It's mama.
Oh. Now, if you could go back into history and you could choose one Nepali historical moment, what would that be?
I want to choose, I think, 2000 when the king died. Our beloved king, I would say. I want to just rewind and just make them all alive. I don't know, that really touched me for a long time. I was really, how do I say?
I think we were all in disbelief
that
it actually happened the way it did as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I really lost the hope in the life as a whole, as a society, as entire world, that there is any positive thing could happen after that.
Yeah.
And it took me a month to come out of that. I used to dream every night about the king and queens, and you know, it was a really terrible time. I just feel that I wish they could live a bit further and that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that is, I think, one of the saddest things.
Yeah, it's a very saddest part of life, isn't it?
It is. So this podcast is all about journeys of our guests, for our listeners to get a glimpse of what you went through to get to where you are. So as a starting point, I like to start from where it all began. So the childhood, I know. How were you as a child? What was your childhood like?
I could go back age 4. I was like a bit creative child, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to feel that in my heart, but I was quite, not introvert, but I was quite shy. People used to say that I was very shy. I hardly used to speak anything. If people asked me, what's your name? It would take me 3 times to answer, like, okay, Sanyukta, to be heard, not answer. I would answer, but they would not hear me at all. My voice was like quite almost invisible, and they had to repeatedly ask me, what's your name again? Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Feri bannata, insani the bacha balama, sunena, ali thulo sole banana. And then 3-4 times, then they would hear, and they would not particularly get my name because my name was a bit complicated then. It wasn't very common name. So it would take them to pronounce it 3 times at least. And they would not never forget my name after that. So
it's like once they know. Yeah, exactly. And have you always been into the arts?
Yeah. I always knew. It's a kind of strange thing to say. Sometimes even I feel strange that, and I ask my friends and my husband and other people who I know around me, ask about their childhood. Do you used to think like that, or did you have anything like that in your mind? And there's like, oh, we hardly remember what we used to do in that age. So that's the funny part. I do remember, and I always used to feel that whatever I do in my life, it has to be art filled, a creative side of it.
But
I couldn't speak out. You know, I wasn't like a very hurt kind of person, like, you know, who would people would listen to me. That was my dream, like, oh, I wish people could listen to me. That was like a dream, you know. In my heart, I could, you know, in myself, I could speak. I have got a beautiful ideas, vision, but I would never could speak out. It will just stay within me. So art was a form that I could express myself. So I really enjoyed, and I was strong from inside since childhood. Doesn't matter what people say, and obviously I used to be bullied because I was too shy, and I was you know, the kids who are like a weak kind of people, because I used to I couldn't fight like a bully, like, you know, if somebody says to me, I would just listen, and I could not say them back anything. But in my heart, I want to say something, but But you know, the voice wouldn't just come out. That's it. And that's gone. I'm gone. You know?
You've said something in your mind, but it just won't come out in open.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yes, I would like to say this in this return. But oh my God, my voice wouldn't come. And I was like, oh God, come on, Sunita, say, you know, and couldn't say anything. So that was another thing, I think that lacked a lot in my childhood. And people used to, obviously, you know, their friends, they just take advantage of this thing, isn't it? And they would say whatever they like, and I'll be quiet, and I'll be like, can't say anything. So yeah, I was like that even till late school, like 10. I was like that. Even I remember when I was 8th standard and I went to the new school called Future Star, and I had so many new friends and I was so excited to join them. And because of my shy nature, it's really hard to make friends. You know, people would not just come to me and speak to me. I always say, oh, I wish I could have some friends. I used to stay alone and all dream about, like, I wish I could have a bunch of friends who would I could talk. Because they already had the friends, you know, when you were class eight, you would have all the groups, isn't it, already built up from the years and years. And I struggled. And there used to be a group talks, and the girls would talk about movies and, you know, there's so many various things, picnics or whatever, their various different interests. And I always feel like, oh, I want to say something about myself or anything that I experienced. And when I speak, in few minutes, there would be no one there. Everyone would be disappeared because I was so boring.
Oh, my God.
And that really used to break my heart. Oh, my God. You know, if the other friend says something, everyone will be bunched up and they would listen, they would laugh. If I say something, everyone disappeared. And I was just like, oh, my God. You know, that's too difficult to make friends, you know?
Yeah.
But in my deep heart, I knew that through my art, the friends will come back to me. So, yeah, it was a kind of, I think art has been my true friend. I would say since the beginning, I used to dance a lot. I used to sketch. I used to lots of various craft work.
Did you do any classical dances or just normal dance?
Yeah, classical. I was very, very keen on classical dancing.
Oh, okay.
I used to learn from, obviously, my dad didn't want me to be a dancer or go into that field. So I wasn't allowed to go to the dance schooling, but I really, really wished I could go and learn dance. That has become just a side dream. And I used to learn just from TVs, from movies, you know, just repeatedly put the movie on and learn from them. So I used to do classical dance.
It's never too late.
I don't know. Now I can't even move. My body is like so lazy, and I don't know. It's very difficult.
And just at 8, when you were 17 years old, you went for your diploma, no? How supportive was your family for you to go into like arts? I know you mentioned a little bit about how your dad didn't want you to go into dancing, but how supportive were they in terms of you going into arts and getting a diploma there?
It's kind of a long story, honestly. If I tell all in detail, probably it would take hours and hours. It's a very crucial time of my life, I would say. It was very, very crucial. It was a kind of luck that Lokotia Institute opened that time in Kathmandu. I just felt like they came for me. I don't know. Because later they closed it, and in a couple of years, few years, I think.
Because when I looked it up, it said just India. There wasn't any in Nepal.
Absolutely.
And I was like, wow, like, how did you go to India when you were 17 years old? Like, it's because times were different back then as well. It's not like now where you're connected.
So, you know, the Lakote came for me.
They definitely did.
Exactly. It was meant to be, I would say. It was a really, really hard time. Basically, what happened is after passing SLC exam, I joined Holivision Plus 2, and I took English literature and mathematics, which was my one of the favorite subjects. But I, that time was like, I had to convince my dad that I would not want to do science and or commerce, because I'm not a business-minded person. I don't like doing business. I used to say that, but I'm doing it now. I don't like at all. Business side is not my side. It's only art. I just want to be in a background and just create something. And then I don't want to be doctor and engineer. I did had a really good result, higher first division in SLC. So it was a really, really good mark. So my mom and dad, I'd say that maybe could be doing, you know, science, so you could have the expect to go the engineering or doctor, you know. Everyone, every mom and dad that time would want to have that, the career prospect. But I was quite determined, and my dad understood, and he said that, okay, if you want to do, you know, arts, take a different subject, that's fine, as long as you study. Because my dad, I would say it was kind of, I wouldn't want to blame him, because he was the one who always inspired me. He was a very good dad. He is a very good dad. He always wanted his kids, like whether son or daughter, to excel in the study and, you know, choose the career path that really, really can make a difference in society. And he always used to encourage us to, you have to work hard to study and to, you know, make a name for yourself. I don't want my daughter to be just to be, you know, just a daughter. Like, I want you to be someone, you know, I can look up to and I'd be proud of.
Because at the end of the day, they just want what's best for the kids, right? Like, in their own way.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Because if you see the time period, when they were in their teenies, they wouldn't even go to school properly. Exactly. They had to struggle. They had to fight with their parents. I want to study. I want to go to school. And my dad had the same thing. Like, they he really had to fight to study, you know. So for him, having the education was so crucial. And that time, you know, the fashion, those things were like completely out of them. You know, it's like nowhere. And I wouldn't expect him to understand, because even I didn't know what fashion is that time. Like,
and you can't guarantee anything either, right?
Yeah. And especially in Nepal, that was completely nothing, almost not. There were a few designers before, but there was nothing really like now, you know. And there wasn't any school either. So, that time, and I wanted to study. I said, like, I couldn't dance, but I want to do my arts because I was good at sketching. And but my dad said, like, you can't to go to two schools, because otherwise it will hamper your study. How could you balance fashion and then your degree? You know, I want you to have a degree in your subject, whatever you're doing right now. So I wouldn't allow you to join fashion, because I don't want you to, you know, be nowhere, basically. But I couldn't convince him, and he didn't like the fashion field that time. He was worried for me, and I could totally understand, but I asked for the, you know, chance. But yeah, so I didn't have a support from him in terms of that matter. But then my sister stepped into it, and she really helped me, and she's the one who really get money to actually study fashion. Otherwise, as a 17 years old, I have no money at all. So how could I even finance it? Fashion is always expensive thing, isn't it? And so, yeah, she was really kind and really understood me that time, and she helped me to enroll in a fashion college, fashion school that time. And that's how I joined fashion diploma. But at the same time, I had to study the other parts as well. So I wasn't just doing fashion, I was studying English literature.
So you're doing two different things at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I used to wake up 6 in the morning, I think 5:30 or 6, and that was like a morning school in Holy Vision.
Mm.
So I used to go to school, do plus two, study, and then come back home around 1 p.m. on 12 and eat meal, and then go to another school, 2 to 5 or 6 o'clock. I used to return home and then do my homework of normal school. And then after 12, then only I would do fashion, because I was not allowed to study that. So I have to,
yeah.
Everyone sleeps, then my sketch would start.
Wow.
So teenage life was quite intensified. Because
it's
almost
like the movies.
But it was really intense, and but I was so happy. Like, I didn't feel that tired at all. I really can't do that same thing now, because I even remember, like, how I managed to do that, you know, to, like, wake up that early and then late night and then all those things.
I think when you're younger as well, like, you have all this energy and this can-do attitude, you know, like,
yeah.
If you set your mind something, you can do everything, you have all this motivation to do it as well. But now, like, you just get so comfortable and you're like, no, I just want 9 to 5, like, I don't want to do anything extra.
Absolutely. But when you have a kid, you don't have extras.
It's 24/7.
24/7. So I'm still 24/7, but in a different way. I had a really, really busy life that time. So my teenage wasn't like a teenage, like any other kids used to have. So I couldn't go to any picnics. I didn't go to cinema with my friends. All of my friends used to be really angry with me, like, Sanita, come on. Like, you know, you're so daddy's girl. Like, you know, you don't come out at all. You have to get time for yourself as well, you know, you're doing too much work, blah, blah. So I was like, no, I'm happy. I know what I'm doing. You know, it's like, I got that opportunity to study and I was so happy. You know, I was like, oh my God, I could do something I'm so passionate about. That's how I started. Yeah.
That's amazing. Now, at the back of this course as well, you won the Best Design Award and were chosen to design for Miss Nepal, I know. Was that your officially like your first job?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh, how amazing is it to have that as your first job?
First job, first award. And I got paid as well that time. So it was like a really unexpected thing happened. So basically how it started is they in Miss Nepal 1998, yes. So they there was obviously Miss Nepal is still a very huge event for us. It's the biggest fashion event. Like we didn't have any other big fashion events that time. Beside Mr. Bob. So they announced that the Lakota Institute is going to be the official designer for Miss Nepal, and the seniors going to join the team. Seniors going to design. So I wasn't in a part, like I was junior. It was just 3 months I enrolled there. A director in the institute approached me. I don't know, something he saw in me. I say that, Sanita, you are a very good sketcher. Your designs are really, really good. Do you want to design for Miss Nepal? I was like, oh, no. I said first, no. Honestly, I said no. I was like scared. Like, are you kidding? Like, me designing? I just joined. 3 months, you know, I just joined. It's been 3 months. I even haven't designed a proper clothing now. I'm just learning at the moment. And I think I'm scared to design. And the director said to me, you know, creativity has no age limit. We think that you are very, very creative, talented. If you want to join, think about it and let me know by tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I was like too confused. I was totally confused and I wasn't really happy, but I was like confused that time, you know. I didn't know what to say. And I went back to home and I told my mom. My mommy was like, obviously, still she's my best friend. I share everything with my mom, very close with her. So I shared with her, like, this thing happened in the class and director asked me this. What should I do? What do you think? And mom said that, this is amazing. You know, why would you not take the opportunity? You know, it's, you know, something knocking on your door and you are confused. Just do it. You know, you never know. Like, she really, really told me that time. I still remember. And she said that, you know, just do it. Yeah. And I was like a really, really nice support. And I said, yes, next day. And that's how my journey started. And so I was chosen by one of the participants besides doing the other designs.
Mm.
And she saw me something about me as well. I guess, I don't know. So she gave me the project. And I guess I designed the first ever dress in my life that time.
Wow. And then I read that you went on to design for like Miss World, Universe, and even Indian Idol. What was the learning curve there?
It was a natural progression to going to Miss World. And, you know, once I got awarded and then I got another opportunity to design, not a design, but give a sketch, like, you know, the design. What we were told was hand over your sketches, do best as you can, all the students in the Khojia Institute, and the Miss Nepal will come and choose whatever they like, right? So it was like a freestyle platform, like nobody had control who would get chosen. I designed, but I had a really tough time because I was doing 12 that time and I had the final exam.
Because you were still doing plus two as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yeah. So I had exams and I had to, the day I waited for Mr. Pal that time, I still remember that moment. We, all of the students in Lakotia, were sitting waiting for Mr. Pal until 9 p.m.
Mm.
They didn't come because they were so busy giving interviews and they had to cancel that day.
Oh my God.
So I couldn't see them at all. So I was just waiting, putting my sketch in my lab, waiting for them. And then said, like, no, it was too late. They were stuck in an interview. So they can't come today. And the next day was my exam. So the next day they invited to come with the sketch was my exam. And obviously, yeah, you can imagine my dad was not allowed at all. I know that, you know. I know what my... You know, what extent I can go.
Yeah. And what's a complete no-no.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, I can't do at all. What shall I do? And the teacher said that you can send the sketch and, you know, and there's nobody to describe your design. Unfortunately, you have to explain yourself, what your vision, what you're trying to achieve and what you can give it to the parts. You have to impress, you know, them to get your design. But there wouldn't be anybody. You have to come yourself. But I couldn't that time. And I said, I'm so sorry. I just sent the sketch. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had to leave that opportunity because of my exam. And and my sister just took the sketch and left it to the table, basically. And fortunately, all the Mr. Pals picked my design.
Oh, that's great. Even without you being there.
Yeah. And when I was called next day, the design surgeon, I was like, okay, Neeru have chosen, obviously Neeru, Mr. Pal. She was one of my favorite Mr. Pal. Absolutely love her. It was such a pleasure working with her. Very inspiring, very positive person I have ever met. And there was Jyoti Pradhan, was a Mr. Pal, former Mr. Pal, who was obviously a different story. Yeah, they'd all chosen my design for their finales. So it was a really, really amazing experience. So yes, that's how I got to design for all of them. And that's how my journey started, full-fledgedly, after that, nonstop.
Wow, yeah. And then I guess around 2004, you decided to come to London at LCF. Did you have any transitional challenges coming from Nepal to UK as well? And then you've already done so much work in Nepal, like, you know, with like big fashion events and then coming to London. How was that experience like?
It was quite like a roller coaster, I would say.
Mm.
It was very, tough decision I made that time, because by the time 2004, I was like, it was a really, really hype in my career. I was doing all the big events, movies, and I was in the paper everywhere, in the cover, and I was doing lots of different things, and people by the time really believed already in me, and everyone wanted my design. You know, it's like, it was so much in hype. Like, people would get angry when I say, no, I can't, I don't have time to design. It was like, you know, it's like everywhere, everywhere is like, almost like everyone wants to grab me or something like that.
Mm.
But then I was feeling something lacking. I don't know. I just felt it's quite empty inside me. I was having a fame. Everyone is loving me. Everyone wants my design. I could do all the events I want. You know, I could meet all the celebrities. I could design for them. And it was a really nice career happening. But then inside, I felt like there's something missing, you know, the kind of purpose that I was looking for, because I always believe that fashion is not just about just designing, you know, it has a deeper meaning. But what that deeper meaning, I really couldn't figure out, you know. Doesn't matter like how successful you are, but what's missing, you know, what I couldn't really figure out. And then I thought, like, maybe it's, I need to really seek that knowledge. I need to find out what is it that I'm lacking. Maybe I need to study more to really understand fashion in depth. So that time in Nepal, there wasn't any fashion college, unfortunately, when I was there. The diploma done, there was only diplomas, small, like, you know, the small, like 1 year, 2 year kind of courses. I did degree in English literature by that time. I finished my degree. And I about to do master's in English literature again. But then it was too much. You know, I was so much busy, and doing master's in English literature was so tough. And I asked the principal, how, you know, can I study both, you know, now in the States? And he said, like, I think you have to choose one. To, you know, he's like, you otherwise you'll be staying in a two boats, you know, and you're going to struggle, because the English literature is very tough and you have to study hundreds of books. I was like, okay, I wouldn't have time. And by the time I have impressed my dad, and my dad, you know, obviously he understood everything.
He's seen your hard work and your results as well.
So he was very full-heartedly supporting me to really further my passion that time. So I had to take that, you know, decision to really amplify that as well, and really take the opportunity. You know, my dad is being very open-minded, and he wants me to do further, learn my skill even better way. And then I decided to leave everything I had at that time to study master's in fashion in London College of Fashion. And not particularly London College of Fashion, but to study further, basically. Then I got a lot interview. Like, I was accepted to many universities. I did even got scholarship because of my work and my awards in America. I was about to go to America first, but then I had to come to UK. It was fate. It was written there somewhere. and I had a very long interviews and all, and they chose, out of, I think, 500 people applied for the master's, and they chose 10 people.
Wow.
Yeah. Around the
world.
That's
very impressive.
Yeah, it was really tough competition. I was lucky to study in London College of Fashion, because I think I truly, really learned in a very focused way, because when I was in Nepal, I had to juggle so many things, like, you know, my other study and the work and the fashion design. You know, it's like so many things happening at the same time. But when I was studying, it was my job was to just study. So it was really cool.
Yeah. And I was just focused on
it. And I was not allowed to do any job. They interviewed. I was not even allowed to do part-time job. They said that if you do part-time job, you won't be able to finish this. It's a really tough
time. Yeah.
You have to sacrifice. Are you ready for that? So I took that chance, like, okay, I'm not going to do anything, just study.
Yeah. How much do you think studying, doing your master's in fashion at LCF helped you with your future work and your future endeavors as well?
A lot of ways. I think that's where I found the real depth in fashion, and I could study so many things about the world, you know, understand the whole structure of how fashion businesses works. Even looking at London itself was a study for me. It was like you just open the shop, and really my mind used to work in a completely different way. So I used to take everything as a part of education rather than going around just seeing the place. It wasn't seeing the place for me. I used to study. You know, I used to do lots of museums, and most of my time used to be spent in museums. So that was my favorite pastime. And London itself, the whole London was my school, I would say. So I had a lots of insightful thing happen that time, and it was really tough because I came from a very completely different background. You know. With nobody in my family or anybody around me from fashion background, there's no connection in London in terms of fashion. So it was really starting from zero, which was in a way, I think that made me more stronger because that really taught me how to cope the worst part of your life. People used to know me that time in Nepal, and I almost had a bit of identity crisis as well, because but then I took it as a positive way, because I was very like, everyone when you used to go out and everyone, oh yeah, I have seen you in a magazine, I've seen you here, you know, and I had to dress so nicely to even to step out of the house at that time.
Yeah.
I was quite self-conscious that time because it was, you know, came like really all of a sudden I had to juggle my teenage life to really cope to be a designer. You know, I used to be so young.
Yeah.
And when me and my sister used to go to the film set, and the director would approach directly to my sister. Oh, so you're the sonic distress, you're the designer. And she would direct to me, no, I'm her sister, I'm just giving her company. She's my little sister, she is the designer, you know? And I was like, oh, that young. Like a teenage girl, you know? Like,
yeah.
Of course. And so I had to dress very maturely to prove people that I should, you know, I used to dress more maturely so that people would trust me, basically.
Yeah.
So when I came here, I didn't have to do that at all. Nobody knew me. So I was...
You could just be yourself.
Yeah, I would just even wear a rag and walk in the street. Who cares? Like, nobody knew me. And I found that as a really positive energy for me to really understand who am I, what my purpose of my life, and am I just going with the flow of all the fashion... You know, when you take an ambition, you are so much into it, you forget about the world and you forget about what inside you and what you need. And I think having that really gap moment, like nothing, no identity. Yeah. So Sanyukta is nowhere. Nobody knows me. That hurt me, first of all. It really pinched me. Oh, my God, what have I done right or wrong, you know? All the industry friends, all the big photographers that time. So still they are very close to me. And they used to ask me, Sanyukta, are you doing the right thing? You know, when you return Nepal, you wouldn't have the same name, you know. People would forget you. People would completely forget you. Are you crazy? Are you leaving everything here?
Must have been so difficult.
And are you leaving just like that? And when you come back, there wouldn't be anything, you know? Are you ready for that? And I said, I'm ready. I was ready for that. I said, like, I have to take a risk. So, yeah, so the gap period was really insightful, really understanding me inside me, what I want in my life and in a career as well. So I did work so many places and It was a really struggling days. Nobody would believe me. Nobody would give me job, right? Who are you? It's like, who knows it? Just rest, you know. Yeah, yes, you have experience, but
yeah.
That doesn't matter, you know. There's no worth in here in a London, like, you know, your experience doesn't count. So I was devastated that time. But I didn't leave my hope. I was very strong from inside, like since my childhood. It's inside, my inside, deep inside me always used to come kind of very strong voice. Since my childhood, you can do it. You know, you're not the one who would step back. You just have to keep on going. You know, that's the voice I always need to have in the deep inside my heart.
I think you always believed in yourself from very early on. Even though other people might say anything else, you always believed in yourself and your art.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that was a really positive feel I always used to feel since my childhood. I always felt so strong from inside, and people used to say, oh, you are so, you know, weak or this or that, whatever they say, I would hear from one ear and come out, it used to come up out here, like, and I used to say inside me, not to them, inside me, you don't know me, do you? You know how strong I am inside, you don't know me. So I used to say to just couldn't express that time, but I used to sing inside, I used to talk myself like, but they don't know me, you know. I used to take it very positive way, you know. I used to even if they used to bully me or do very naughty things, I used to always give them a nice answer and always try to do good things to them. Then they used to feel guilty, you know, and then they used to come back to me. So it's I always try to turn thing in a positive way rather than other way around.
Yeah, true. And in 2011, then you opened your own bridal store, Behuli, which has won so many awards in its like debut year. But I wanted to find out more about how you even got to opening a store of your own. Like early on, you mentioned you weren't really into business, but now you have your own business. And then going into bridal, making it like this eco-friendly thing as well. How did all that come about for you?
You know, the kind of gap I was telling you about, something that was missing, that's what I found here in London. So that's the sustainability factor, which obviously I did lots of research throughout my journey here and obviously saw all the plus and minus side of the fashion industry, I felt in one point like, I'm not designed for a fashion industry, you know. I'm not that person that I could speak loud and say, like, look at me, that's my design, wear my design. You know, like, how could I say that? I'm not designed like that since my childhood. I'm not, like, that kind of person, you know. And fashion is a very tough industry. You know, you have to speak loud. You have to sell yourself. You have to be, like, out there to prove yourself, like, look at me, you know.
Be able to sell yourself.
Absolutely. So that was not like me, and I did work in a fashion industry, different designers, intern for them, and I found very tough, very, very tough, like even with the people around it, very dominating, and they would not let you up at all, you know, like it's a really, really it's not as nice as people see from outside. It's a bit darker. I found it's very dark, very sad industry. But then I found a kind of throughout, you know, it's like a kind of experience. You work, you learn from your experiences and others' experiences, and I found what's lacking in the industry was the humanity, you know, like kind of really kindness to the people and kindness to the earth. That was lacking then. Mm-hmm. It was like completely, nobody cared about the other, you know, the people, the interns used to work like so hard for years and they wouldn't pay. They wouldn't care. There's big designers. They have so many people. They don't even recognize who worked for them. There are no existence for all the creative people who really give to their designs, they wouldn't even treat badly. And I was even treated badly. You know, I was not even given a transportation fee. Like, you know, I had to really ask for, like, you know, I work for free, but you said that you were going to give me the, you know, the transportation cost. But then the designer says, like, sorry, you have to give me the tickets. But I, you know, they used to have like a tap system in London.
Yeah.
And how would I have a receipt, right? but she knows that I come every day, work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Keep my eyes out doing all these detailed work for the couture pieces. But then I had to prove with the receipt, just claiming £2 for travel.
Oh, that's horrible.
So it was no water, no tea for interns. Like, it was like a really disaster. But that was a really good experience for me because then I knew what's bad going on.
Yeah.
But then I had a feeling that if I have a company, then I wouldn't do that to my staff. And I wouldn't do, I wanted to create that really good business. Mm. I just had a feel like that's what, you know, I think I should do.
Yeah.
So it all came with a really, from out of all the negativity around, I came up with a very positive feel for my brand.
Mm.
And I decided to do sustainable, which I was always inclined to. It was not like, I knew that before what it's called, but I was doing it because during my time in Nepal as well, I used to volunteer for WWF. I work as a journalist for Kandipur publication. I used to write fashion column to educate people.
You have done so many things.
So my aim was to aware people, not just design, you know, not just make a beautiful clothes, but the essence behind the beautiful clothes should be, you know.
Yeah, you wanted a purpose, not just design things for events. You wanted something that meant something as well.
Exactly. So I always wanted people to know fashion is much deeper. It's not just about just what you see outside and just fun. It's, you know, you can give back to the society. You can really do something through your work, through fashion as well.
Why bridal wear?
Because I think bridal industry is a little bit more happier and kinder than the fashion industry. I personally found that. As I said, I would work with several designers, several companies.
Mm.
And as soon as I reached to the bridal, I felt like, oh my God, that's it exactly I should be doing, because it's you have to convince people with love, not just by shouting, not just by telling what to wear. People, you know, you got to listen to others, not somebody to listen to you.
Mm.
The opposite thing, right?
Yeah.
In fashion, I had to really speak out, but in bridal, I had to listen. I had to listen deeply what love is all about, how to make them fulfilled, how to really embrace them, how to make them comfortable, how to really make them really happy, you know?
And on their biggest day of their life as well, you get to be part of it, to make the bride feel beautiful. Like, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, so I found really strongly connected. And I, because of my experience working with so many Miss Nepals throughout my journey and working in the movie industry, I always has to study, understand the nature of the person. I always used to do that. Even when I was 17, I used to study a person and I used to design for them. So it hardly used to go wrong, you know, because when you study someone, when you understand someone's feelings, vision, their body structure, their weaknesses, their strength.
Mm.
When the design comes out, it comes out with the solutions, not just a beautiful design, but design that really embraces their characteristic, their nature, their personality. And that person who's wearing it makes she or he feels very elevated, you know, very powerful and very happy about what they're wearing because it's a kind of reflection of who they are in a better way, a nicer way. So that was my skill since the beginning.
Yeah. Like from when you decided you wanted to create your own bridal wear to actually opening up the store with your own staff, how long did that whole process take?
It was like step by step process because I didn't come up with the idea, okay, I'm going to make a sustainable bridal wear and I'm going to launch the boutique tomorrow. It wasn't like that. It was a step by step, you know, journey that led me to do that. So basically, first I introduced my collection, which I believed, and that time as well, everyone laughed, you know, what sustainable designs, you know, are you crazy? Like, who's gonna wear, what you're going to do, blah, blah. There are so many questions around me, and I found very hard to convince people, but I could not stop not listening my heart, you know. I could listen to everyone, but the voice inside me would always come and knock my door, like, you know, you should stick onto it.
Yeah.
What you believe, do it what you believe. You know, that the inner voice always come and just make me it just I couldn't really have a choice. I just had to listen to my heart.
Yeah.
And so I just followed my heart, and obviously my husband helped me a lot. I have been extremely lucky to have a partner like him, who understood every vision I had, and
then he gives you momos as well. That's the best.
Oh yes, absolutely. So it's gradually we grow to smaller brand because first time I introduced my collection, I was chosen at the 20 best sustainable brands in London that time. And that was the government encouraging the designers to create sustainable designs for the, you know, to generate environmental awareness and to be like to do something for the nature, for the earth, for the planet. And that's how I obviously grew my brand, and I had so many stockists around Ireland and Europe and all that. Places, people started buying my designs for their boutiques, and that's how it started. And then at one point I have to see the bride directly, you know, and that's the way forward, because what I believe, I really need to deliver that, and I need to educate more people, you know, because there was so much lack. I found like so there's no this kind of education. People are so much into just money, business, money. It's like all they care about, the money, but there is beyond that thing, you know. How would I make them understand? It was so difficult, you know. I would be like an odd person in the whole entire world. When I attend the events, all these big fashion, bridal fashion events, I'll be just myself telling I'm a sustainable designer. And sometimes I had to hide that fact that I do sustainable designs because people would be very scared. What is sustainable? You know, you make a dress out of bamboo, out of soya, out of banana. And it's crazy. They would think of as it's maybe it's like a rag. It's like hippie. All sorts of very not glamorous, not elegant, you know.
Yeah.
But when they used to see my design, they used to be like, oh, but it's something different, you know. They used to get really shocked about how beautiful the nature, out of nature, we can create the product and without killing others. But it took so long. It's like very few people would understand, but many people would not understand, right? Then we decided to open a boutique so that we can reach out to many brides ourselves. And then we have that's how we had so many followers all around the world. Brides started coming to our boutique, searching for our particular boutique to wear designs. And I was amazed how once we started a boutique, it was like sky's the limit. There are so many people, the people around the world, you know, you just need to be connected. They will search you. They will track you. They will find you. You know, I didn't go to, obviously, as you can imagine, coming from Nepal, having all these struggles, I didn't have any godfather. I didn't have any big budget to advertisement, you know, nothing, you know. I started very in a small amount, step by step, gradually being positive, just focused.
And then your work just speaks for itself.
Hopefully you understand that. I'm trying, and we are trying our best. And I think the world has changed quite a lot the past 10 years. And now, as you can see, the sustainability has been a bit of fashionable word now. It's a buzzword. Want to put now all the brands and fashion companies, they want to put one sustainability word in their website, whether they understand or not.
Yeah. So over the years, working with different fashion houses, you've had different experiences, and I guess your experience has changed as well through education and all the experiences you've had. What does fashion mean to you today?
I think same how I used to feel. It's a form of art. Mm. The way you express the inner beauty, it has a deeper meaning. And most importantly, I would say to the people to really, really understand this really simple thing, is fashion has been the second polluted industry in the world. We should not forget that. It has been a disaster for many people, many animals. We really need to be aware that we have to be really conscious about what we wear, what we buy, and we have to really think, you know, before we buy, basically, where, how it's coming. And I think that way we can probably in future make a better place for many people.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful. So one of the things in this podcast is delving into the construct of what success means, because you've gone through different areas of success in different parts of your life from when you were 17 till now. What does success mean to you?
I think it really depends on how you look at it. It's like, you know, what you say, the beauty in beholder's eyes. So the same thing for everyone takes success in a different way. But I think for me, it's about finding the purpose of life. Mm-hmm. I think if you found the purpose of your life in a more positive way, you are successful. Because personally, I feel just having a money, just having a fame, just having followers, I wouldn't be happy. I wouldn't be successful. I might be, you know, having so many things, even in my career, you know, if I had to leave so many opportunities to balance my life, right? So we have to choose between, okay, the success always comes in a different ways and knocks your door, you know, you miss it sometimes. Mm. But it's a really matter of really evaluating what is meaningful to your life. And for me, it's always been family. So if I have been successful in other way around and then really made so much money and, you know, on the top of the world, if I don't have family, I'll be the most, you know, person for me.
Of course.
I'll be absolutely nowhere. I wouldn't have anybody to share my happiness. So it's about balancing act. I think it's overall, it's like, what you call it? I would like to think as a more sort of 360 degree, you know, it's not like one, it has to be all around, accumulatively, positive in your life. And you think you are being, you know, your health, your mental health, your family life, your love life, you know, everything needs to have that together. And that for me is satisfaction, and satisfaction I feel like a success.
Perfect. Now, just to wrap things up as well, if there's any advice you could give to someone who is far away from home and are struggling to find their path, what would that be?
Okay. From my experience, young generation, which I feel they are so much suffocated with all these social media, evaluated by the followers and this and that, and the material success is like people would assume, like they would take it as a very big success. But I think that's not right.
Yeah.
end of the day, you don't want to be alone and you want to be loved, and you need so many things in your life, not just one thing. Mm-hmm. So to balance that, I think that being focused on what you love is very crucial, because when you work on something that you really believe, it becomes not work. You don't get tired, you know, you don't get exhausted, you don't get tortured. You just have to keep that passion alive and then keep working on it. You know, there's always ups and downs. Who doesn't have ups and downs? Even if you think of all the successful people, like, you know, people are millionaires or monetary, like if you evaluate it that way as well, all the celebrities, they all struggle in that stage as well. You know, in the current stage, they are the most popular people, but they have so many things. They suffer. So, coming from, like, you know, the youngsters who are struggling to make a path, they shouldn't feel like they are the only one who suffer. Any stage of life, you suffer. That's a part of our journey. It shouldn't take as, okay, if I pass this journey, I'll be successful. I will be happy. There's nothing like that in the world. You have to be realistic. Life is full of struggle. It's a different stage of struggle. You know, you just have to cope in a positive way. You have to really embrace all the flaws we have around us, you know, all the negativity as well. Like, if you take negativity as negativity, you would feel drained, you know, it will kill you. You have to accept that people are negative around you, people try to pull your legs, people, you know, it's a very very intensified, really really difficult industry to work. I guess lots of industries are like that, you know. There's always groupism. There's always people want to dominate you. You know, people don't want other, like, especially outside in the industry, wants to grow so fast. There's struggles everywhere. You would find that in every stage of your life. So, but if you accept that fact that I'm struggling, but I'm ready to struggle, no matter what is it, and don't lose the hope, you know, is the hope that really makes you keep going. And failure is always the path to success. I always believe that, because when I do fail, I get happy. You'll be surprised. When I fail first time, I feel like, oh, there must be something better waiting for me. That's how I think. There's always, you know, something miserable thing happens. Obviously, I get sad. I'm human, you know. I have emotion. I feel so frustrated. I'm like, oh, God. And then in a few minutes or a few hours, I feel like, this is a sign. There's something better waiting for me. And I wake up, I just stand myself and I just, you know, really focus my head. And I was like, okay, let's keep doing.
I think just hearing from your life journey as well, you really know how to focus on what you want. And that's always been like your art, the way to express yourself, either as a person or you let out your creativity as well. And regardless of where you are, no matter what situation you're in, you always turn any negativity into positivity. And like, even you mentioned all your experience in London with the fashion industry, but you took that as something as you don't want to do it in the future, and how to cultivate a world of kindness and help the environment, something with purpose. So it's so inspirational to actually hear you talk about your life journey and how you are where you are.
Yes, you are who you are. Like that. Thank you. It's amazing to share all these emotions with you. It's been a really nice flashback. You know, as I talk, I travel to different, you know, the sceneries that comes in your head.
And I'm like going on that journey with you as well. I'm like, when you're telling me like you had to do +2 in the morning and stuff, I'm like, I was there. Like, I felt like I could imagine you, like, you know, studying and then going there and doing all that stuff and then coming to London. And it's been such a good journey for me just to go through that as well. It's like a movie almost. So thank you.
It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. The screenshots you've been sharing with key insights on the episodes and tagging us at hamro.yathra on Instagram truly make my day. So thank you, and keep them coming.